Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, welcome. Well, you know what, we teach a lot at our church, and we are, in our books, we always plan like the first 5 minutes are when people are going to be finishing their coffee and yakking and coming in. So the first 5 minutes of our book always starts out with a destination for the day. And that lists what you're going to do that session. So there's like 3 or 4 sentences there. And then if somebody comes in late, they see where we're going. You don't have to repeat the introduction. And then we have a postcard. And the postcard is, after the first session, the postcard is talking about what happened during the week or what it relates to if they did any extra reading on the topic, and they get, it's a sharing time. So by then it's 6 or 7 minutes after the hour, and then you got just about everybody in there. They've had their coffee, all that kind of stuff, and they're coming. So we always plan that because we know that's the way people come to adult education. So today on the screen is the topics for our week. We've been all looking at in terms of the theme for Holden this summer, we say where adult learning flows, community and the common good abound. But the other title is how do you connect the dots between adult learning, Christian community, and the common good. So that's what we're about. And today we're going to be looking at how public education, oh, I forgot to say this. You can see where we've been. This is session number 4 in red, and the topics that we have done already are listed as 1, 2, and 3, and you can see the progression going from how adults learn to learning in churches, and then the impact of learning in churches on building community, and now learning about different topics and how that affects the common good. So today we're going to talk about learning about how public education can impact the common good, how it can affect, give the benefit to the whole community, not just to your family. So this is where we're off to today. And now we have a visual intro. So in Micah 6:8 we read, "He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God."
And Matthew 25, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Truly, I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me."
And 1 Corinthians 10:24, "Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbors." There are more than 2,000 Bible verses that call us to defend the poor and the vulnerable. So it's not a small issue in the Bible. I mean, if you look at how many might talk about sexuality or homosexuality, this is major. This is a major thing. Let's pray together. God of unimaginable power and glory, stir us from the comfort zone of our habits and give us the vision, compassion, and determination to work to provide food, drink, and clothing to those who need it, to care for those who are sick, to visit those in prison, and to give the gift of friendship, and to work for a more just society. Amen. today we're going to look at two stories. The first one comes from the Summer of Christian Life, and it's called Choosing to Work for Justice. And it's about school desegregation in the late 1960s.
70s.
Both stories, this one and the next one, are from our books that we write for adult discussion groups in churches. And if you took a flyer when you came in, that sort of describes all of them. They're available in the bookstore here. They're also available in Trinity Seminary in Columbus, Ohio, where we're from, but probably that's not where you all are going to be. And they're available online on our website.
So you can have these same kinds of experiences in your churches with this kind of materials.
Yeah, because we write a leader's guide as well that gives you suggestions and hints on how to teach it. The second story is from Here to Community, Enhancing Christian Community in Today's Society. During the readings, what we want you to notice is who or what influenced the couples that are in the stories that we're going to talk about. So the first story is an email conversation with two siblings, Lynn and Paul, and their father. And I was supposed to ask somebody to read Lynn and somebody to read Paul when you came in, and I didn't do that. So what did I do with them? Yeah, I have them right here. They're on orange paper. Oh dear. You have them, Dick?
I see orange underneath there. Do you see it?
Oh, Dick.
Yes, I'll do
it. Is this Friday the 13th?
I'll do the technology.
Yeah, are these?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Would you like to read Lynn, since you already
I found
it. Yes, you found it.
But
okay.
I should be exempt.
And then there's a real short one from Paul. What guy would like to read Paul?
I'll do.
Okay, Paul's a guy,
not too
many
words.
It's right. Paul is right down there.
Oh, this is all good.
Yes,
good.
It's all right. Good. Yeah. And did you see where Lynn is? Lynn is right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now you know what we forgot to do? We forgot to go around and say what our names are, because I know some of you have been. It worked. Okay. Have been with us before. I am terrible about names. I wish everybody had to wear a great big thing like this. You know, although Irma, anybody know Irma Bombeck? She was in the, she's from Dayton, which is not far from Columbus, and she wrote a funny one about people. She hated to go to meetings in the fall because everybody wore a name tag. And she said, nobody looks at your face, they just look at your left breast. But then I read that if you're in sales or any other thing, you really should put it on your right side, because when you shake hands, they're looking that way and they'll see your name. So we have name tags at our church, and I'm trying to get in the habit of sticking them on the right side. And also to get people to put their name tags on, because most people have some rebellion against that. Okay, so our names. Which guy?
Dale.
Dale?
Noreen.
Again?
Noreen.
Yeah. And?
Megan.
Mary.
Emily.
Doug.
Two Dougs.
Jereen.
And?
Dick.
And Judy. We were supposed to say that, I guess, because there's the microphone up there. We were supposed to say that at the beginning, but I don't know if we're being recorded or not. Okay, so our two volunteers are going to be, for Lynn, it's Jereen. And for Paul, is Doug.
On this side.
Yeah, on this side.
Two Dougs.
Doug on this side. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. So Dick's gonna read the dad.
Dear Lynn and Paul, today is a somewhat emotional day for Mom and me. As I'm sure you have heard in the media, today is the 50th anniversary of one of the most important Supreme Court decisions of the 20th century, Brown versus the Topeka Board of Education. Although this decision was made in 1954, it wasn't until the late 1970s that it reached our city with a lawsuit against the Board of Education and was ruled on by the Federal District Court. This eventually led to court-ordered busing for integration of the public schools that you both are intimately familiar with. Our decision to stay in the city schools and to personally work to support those integrated schools has affected your lives in profound ways. One never knows what it would have been like if we had moved to the near suburbs or even further out, but I'm sure it would have been very different for all of us. We want you to know, as you probably already do, that this is one of the most important and difficult decisions we ever made as parents. We were 38 and 37 years old, not much older than you are now. Most parents at that time, as now, preferred to arrange their children's environment so that every advantage possible headed their direction. We too did that in many ways, but in this case, we chose for the larger justice, which resulted in some challenges in your personal lives, as well as some academic disadvantage for you because of the changes thrust on the schools so abruptly. We wish that everyone would have made the choice we did to support integrated public education. But fear and racism are powerful forces, and we knew from the beginning that many would flee and that you both would have to deal with many unknowns and incredible changes. But we also knew that you would gain some unique life experiences from our choice. And we knew we were ready to arrange our priorities in life to see that you would have the support you would need. We prayed a lot about our choice, and we had a strong support system that included friends from Hope Church and some equally committed neighbors. You might wish to reflect on this a bit today or tomorrow. Love, Dad and Mom.
And now we'll have the response from daughter Lynn to this email.
Mom and Dad, thank you for sending your thoughts about the anniversary of Brown versus Topeka Board of Education and your reflections on our own participation in desegregation. It is a very salient issue for Charles and me right now, since we are considering schools as Josh prepares for kindergarten. Of course, people have said for years that no pastor would want to send their child to school in the neighborhood we live in. But as we draw closer to the decision, I find myself reflecting more and more on my experience and how it has shaped me to be the person that I am, a person who is committed to justice, a person who identifies with the underdog. I also need to process my disappointments with my school experience, like missing out on some AP classes, and that I never really made a black friend. On the whole, however, I am grateful for what the experience has meant to me, and I am grateful to both of you for stepping out in faith to do what you believed was the right thing. I continue to be inspired by your example of taking a risk with that which was most precious to you, your children. It gives me courage to do the same for my children. Love, Lynn.
And now we'll have the response from their son, Paul, to David, to Dad's email.
Hi, Mom and Dad. Know that you did the right thing. Know that your children knew then and still know now why staying in the city schools was the right thing. Know that being/remaining in a homogeneous environment is a disadvantage in itself. Know that learning earlier in life how to deal with challenges is a huge advantage. Love, Paul.
Thank you for the reading. Okay, now on the screen we have a summary of what you just heard.
In a situation where there are conflicting priorities, not all Christian families would make the same decision as Charles and Lynn did with school desegregation. So, just briefly, what injustice is this story about? What's the injustice that we're talking about here?
Racial segregation.
Equal access to education.
Okay, good. Both good answers.
Segregated neighborhoods.
Good. Getting to more root cause sorts of things. Yes.
Well, racism.
Unequal opportunities. Money is valued over labor.
Okay. Who or what influenced these parents? Who influenced these parents? What influenced these parents to decide what they decided?
Pretty much internal values.
Okay.
Social conscience.
Social conscience, okay.
A sense of justice.
Sense of justice.
Realization of community.
Okay.
Not just myself.
Selflessness.
Okay, thinking about the priorities that Mom and Dad had, which ones conflicted? What was their conflict here? What were they mulling over in making this decision?
Wanting advantages for their children versus the reality.
What kind of advantages?
Well, like they mentioned the AP classes.
Okay, so academic kinds of advantages. Okay, comment, Lori?
I was just going to say, the school probably was a big factor, you know, the level of, as they pointed out, the level of, you know, education at this level versus perhaps education at a not quite the same level. Because in many inner schools, the quality of the persons that will go in to that. And then a lot of school districts has to do with finances.
Mm-hmm.
The money goes to the better neighborhoods versus the inner cities.
Well, and often in the city, yeah, they all get the same, but the PTAs in the wealthier areas can make up for all those things that.
Okay, how did their decision affect the common good, which is one of our themes for the week?
Well, for one thing, it reverberated with their children so that their children went through this experience and as adults are very clearly socially conscious, conscientious adults.
How did they, their children, have a wider world view? For lack of a better term, I don't think that isn't the right word, but a broader perspective on things because of the interaction with other ethnic groups and situations.
It threw some aware people into the mix of the school, you know, in terms of the PTA, in terms of the parental involvement.
Okay, that helped the common good?
Yeah,
okay.
I think of some of the lesser schools, sometimes you don't have the parental involvement or the people that have some clout, you know, so often will send their kids to the private schools or someplace and they just completely abandon any political involvement or anything in terms of making the schools better.
Okay, thank you.
I also think that we don't always know. We don't know what the results when we do the right thing. We don't always get a report back. And I certainly know in my own life that people have made small comments or small decisions that have impacted me greatly, but they didn't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So larger impact outside of themselves, this decision.
Can I just do a side thing?
Sure.
Because my dissertation was on the effect of where your student taught on your level of moral reasoning. And did a pre and post, and they watched their teaching and everything. And the kids who student taught in the inner city made by far the biggest gains.
Wow, that's really interesting.
The ones who taught right in St. Cloud, where they went to school, a pretty conservative community, didn't make any gains at all.
Yeah. What do you mean by gains? I'm not sure.
Well, I'd have to go in. There are levels of moral reasoning from Kohlberg, Eric Erickson, and
okay.
David Hunt.
I see.
And we use those measures to measure it.
Okay.
So it made a big difference. And that was just for two quarters of a year.
Mm-hmm.
So they were given those tests like right after the experience?
Pre and post.
Okay.
Uh-huh. How many did you test?
I think there were probably about 60 out student teaching. I'd have to look back at my dissertation to find out for sure.
I guess I'd like to ask, how many of you have had experience with desegregated schools, integrated schools? Anybody in here?
Anyone?
Had experience with integrated schools?
Yeah.
Well, we were integrated, and it wasn't a matter of...
It was automatic. It was naturally integrated.
The system in California was,
Okay, it was naturally integrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, for you too.
Yeah.
Okay.
My kids were, yeah.
Yeah, Oregon was.
Okay.
I have a somewhat different experience having worked for a public school district that is partially on an Indian reservation. So we were integrated both with Native Americans and large Mexican population.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, my experience was serving on the school board in our local community. So.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Now, let's see. Did we do all that we were going to do on that, Dick?
Yeah, I think we did.
Okay. The second story is about Eva and Peter. And it's a contemporary story as opposed to the one that's from the late 70s. And this is from a periodical called The Preaching for Public Life. And we have it in our book from Heron Community. And so the story is about public education today, the PTA and the theology of community. So once again, we want you to listen for what influenced these parents to make their decision on the school situation they're involved with. Okay, when Eva and Peter took an active part in the work of the PTA, they seemed to be taking a normal interest in the education of their daughter, Rachel, and displaying it in a commonly approved way. However, their pastor, alert to an opportunity to teach a theology of community to the church, pointed out in a sermon that their work in the PTA bore witness to a profound theological truth. Peter and Eva were acknowledging that in order to have a good school for their child, they must work for a good school for all the children of that school. Their focus had shifted significantly. Their initial concern for their child evolved into concern for the children of an entire school. Rather than regarding their PTA involvement as a temporary intrusion into their schedules, they might regard it as an experience of the promise that God has placed in the human community. Even though the other parents are not all Christians, that is the other parents in the PTA, not all Christians who are reflecting on the larger significance of their work together, Eva and Peter nevertheless believe that God gathers the human family in Christ, and that consequently, the formation of supportive, nurturing community is always a work and gift of God. They should consider their work in the PTA as a witness to God's greater gathering of the people into community. This understanding would give them a considerably different attitude toward their PTA meetings than they would have if they thought of them only as an intrusion into their schedule or a fight against deterioration in Rachel's schools. So the theology of community is the belief that God gathers the human community. Is that the one I'm supposed to put up? Yeah, okay, sorry. God gathers the human community in Christ, and that consequently the formation of supportive, nurturing community is always a work and a gift from God. So this is a summary of the story of Eva and Peter. So once again, we're going to look at the same three questions. What are the influences? Who or what influenced these parents? What were their priorities? And what was the effect on the common good? So first of all, the influences on Eva and Peter.
Their own child.
Okay, their own child. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like their pastor was an influence.
Mm. Yes. Can you imagine sitting in there and then it being an example in the sermon?
And not being pointed out if you did wrong, right?
Yeah, if you get on a PK, I mean that.
Were you ever an example?
Family situations were out there.
You just want to be careful if it's pointing out sinners in the congregation rather than saints.
I found it interesting that this author says that the formation of community is always a work and a gift of God. That's something that we ought to be doing. And that's what he calls a theology of
formation of the secular community, or the broader community. That's that's what's news here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Outside the church.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So that's a common good, I think.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, you're looking beyond yourself, beyond your own child. Yeah. Let's talk about the priorities of Eva and Peter. They kind of talk about that, how their priorities changed. And you sort of alluded to it.
Yeah, their own child to start with.
Yeah, they started with their child, and then they began to see an interest to the whole community of children. How many of you have done work in PTA? Yeah, there's hardly a parent around who doesn't get to do some of it. Yeah. Okay, all right, let's go on then.
I find this really interesting, coming out of the Missouri Synod back.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, and not really being inclusive necessarily in the Missouri Synod. but one of the and again having this horrendous parochial school system, and it wasn't a popular idea, but I would always raise the question of, by running these schools in our church, are we ignoring our community? Because we are precisely the people who would get out there and become involved morally in the community school and make sure. So instead of doing that, we are running our little school there. And I would always raise that question.
That
we are running this exclusive school and we're ignoring the community and precisely the people that can make a difference.
That's right.
You're raising a very hot political issue there.
It wasn't popular when I raised it. Especially when you're on the staff of a church that had a school.
Yeah. Yes. And what happens in communities that are going under desegregation is that the private schools just mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
They just really grow. There are more of them that come about. The ones that are existing just have a mushroom of kids trying to get into them.
Yeah.
And this is my own viewpoint, but when a kid goes into that private school and they get a little bit in trouble, that school doesn't have to keep them.
No.
They're out of there. So they have this kind of select population. I was a school teacher in the public school system.
That's precisely what happened to a lot of the parochial school systems in Missouri Synod. They became private schools.
Yes, that's
More so than a...
Yes, yeah,
so
that's right.
Encourages even more gaps between rich and poor.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was on a
educated, lesser educated.
I was on a staff in another state, you know, of a church that had a phenomenal school, and it was a school for the rich and famous. I mean,
tuition. But we need something else to make the gap even bigger.
Oh yeah, I mean,
yes,
you know,
as if we
yeah.
do, right.
The income of the parents sending their kids there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Being on staff, I could hardly afford to send my kids there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think today, though, there are people looking at private schools because they have this image of poor public schools, you know, and I get really riled up about that because
yeah.
I think, hey, stick with us then. Stick with us.
Yeah.
Well, I told you yesterday about the whole no child behind and all the testing, and people say, well, testing doesn't show anything anyway. And I heard one man speak and said they absolutely do, and it's absolutely right on. The universal testing absolutely predicts the size of the homes around the school.
It's what
the size of the
homes around
the
school.
Yeah,
but
exactly
the ability of the children not necessarily.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's exactly
yeah.
right.
And with that, the question in Alaska, this is an aside, but I love it. If the question is, what country is south of the United States, and the Alaskan kids say Canada, are they wrong?
That's good. That's good.
That's good.
Well, this discussion was to help us look at what parents who are in the schools think about public education. So it's kind of a background for what we're going to be doing next. But before we go on to that, I want to ask you, and some of you alluded to it, if you've had an experience with some community group that you're in, that you got in for self-interest, like you have your kid in Boy Scouts, but when you got into that community group, your interest expanded beyond yourself. Is there anybody here that can think of an organization beyond the schools or beyond Boy Scouts that you joined or got a part of and thought, oh, this is really good because of what it's going to do for my kid or my, you know, but then you saw something beyond. And if so, what's that organization?
I've never been involved in it. I've not been much of a joiner in sort of the church, but we have good friends that are involved with, for instance, Lions and Rotary, and some of the things that they do to help, you know, the glasses, the scholarship
yes.
funds, things like that. I think, you know, they are definitely much more community-oriented than some of
yes.
private schools and that sort
yes.
of thing. You know, they're interested in the overall community.
And some businesses sort of require their members to join the Rotary or some of those groups.
Yeah,
and then
it expands their horizons.
Yeah.
Correct. They get beyond their own interest or requirement to really look at the bigger issue. Yeah, that's a good one.
Habitat for Humanity.
Yes, that's another one.
My experience was in the arts in a rural, remote community. Where when I landed there, I realized that if I was going to enjoy music and play music, I was going to have to get to, you know, help get and keep things organized. And really, you know, looking back after 30 years of that the, not just because of me, I was not the only one, but starting, you know, with the small effort to bring arts alive in a rural community, and we see a huge impact on the overall community, and especially on children, opportunities given to children that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So,
yes. Yes.
So that I really was starting out just to, you know, nourish my own creativity and becoming part of a fabric like that.
Okay.
We have a good example that a town 35 miles away from us, we're not involved in it. Technically, we go to their concerts. The little town of Susanville, California, has the record of being one of the smallest communities in the world with a full-size symphony. and they have a symphony orchestra that's grown from a little almost chamber music group to close to 60 to 70 members now. But one of the side issues, they have started a junior symphony. And the last we heard, they have like 90 kids from the Sewellville area involved in the junior symphony.
Wonderful.
And it's kind of supplementing and taking the place of the lack of music in the Sewellville schools. So I think that's a great example of a community.
Knowing where Sewellville is.
Yes.
North Central
California. They've got a great symphony orchestra.
It's beautiful.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Great idea.
And they do like 6 concerts a year. They have a whole season, you know. Subscribe to them.
Great.
They had a guy came in, he started, he came in as a women's soccer coach at Lassen Community College.
Sure.
And he was a trumpet player. Quite an excellent one, and got together with groups, and pretty soon it grew and grew and grew. And now Ben is the director of the Sewellville Symphony, and they've got a great thing going for this little community out in the middle of the desert, you know, Northern California.
And what a great idea of how that's gone into affecting the common good, the
oh,
welfare
yeah. oh,
of
yeah.
the whole community.
The town supports it phenomenally.
Yes. Yes.
Really behind it.
We've been really talking about what Micah 6 and Matthew 25 have encouraged us to do. I want to just go for a minute to the 1 Corinthians 1 that says, do nothing out of your own self-interest, but for the good of others. So my question is, do we have to put the interest of others ahead of ourselves? Is that what required of us?
Can't they be together?
Or are we included in the others?
Okay.
Or all of humanity. Or
okay, a balance.
Our community includes us.
Okay.
Oh, the common good includes us. Good.
The good includes us.
Okay, that's very helpful. Okay. Okay.
That's a tough verse to.
Yes, it is.
As a nation, we have a hard time understanding that the common good includes us.
Mm-hmm. And by us, we mean
especially lately.
All of us.
Not just the U.S.,
right.
But all of them.
Okay, so I just want to conclude this by saying that Eva and Peter believe that God gathers the human family in Christ, and that consequently, the formation of supportive, nurturing community is always a work and gift of God. They should consider their work in the PTA as a witness to God's greater gathering of people into community. Okay, are you ready to go on, Dave?
No. I'm ready to go on, but I don't want you to point that slide quite yet.
Okay.
We have a little order problem. If this seems like it isn't quite in order, why?
Yeah, you sure heard the discussion on our list this morning.
Actually, he wanted one more slide in here that we haven't got. Okay, well, we're now going to look at Hope Church's involvement in the neighborhood. How many of you were here last night and learned about Hope Church's neighborhood? Okay, about half of you. Okay.
I want to know what the hymns are.
Which neighborhood will we pick?
That's going to come.
Okay, well, we're going to do a little review of Hope Church's neighborhood here in a minute. But Hope Church has a welcoming and outreach ministry team. And they've decided that they want to explore the idea of supporting that nearby local elementary school. But they don't know how to do it. They've never done anything like this. I don't know whether there's anything on these flip charts that would help us here because they've disappeared.
They're coming right now.
Okay. But just take a look at what we've talked about as far as what parents are concerned about.
What their priorities
are. Some of the things we've just talked about. Just take a minute to think about
pretty small.
Some of the ideas.
That's fine.
It's okay.
some of the ideas we've talked about expanding individual interest to more common good kinds of things. So, Lynn and Charles from session 3 last night now live in the West neighborhood.
Can I put it up yet?
Yeah, you can put it up. That was the big question we were left with last night.
That's mine.
We made a bad decision, but
I agree that you should have been over the Southeast.
For those of you who weren't here, we had this couple that were moving to work at this church. And so they were trying to decide where to live, and so different sections were stating the advantages and disadvantages of their community in order to tell that to Lynn and Charles so they would choose their neighborhood to live in when they were going to
live. All right, well, you got the pointer. Why don't you point out the things on the map there?
Okay. So, if I can push the right button for that one. Okay. So this is the main street that goes down into the city. This red line is the border between the city and the suburb. So this was called the North Neighborhood last night, and we've taken that off now, partly because it's not involved anymore in this story because the family has decided to live here. The church is right there. It's on the street that is the border between the two, and it's on the city side, and the other side of the street is the suburb side. And this is the school that we're talking about that serves these two neighborhoods, and it's very close to the church. This is the Hope Church. And so they've decided to live here, and Lynn wants to be involved in the school. She had been in her other city. She wants to continue with the PTA. She did not want to go back to work, which may be why they chose this neighborhood, so she can live. They can live on the salary of her husband. And there was discussion about whether this church was paying up to the standards if they couldn't afford to live where they wanted to live. But so it was there. They decided to live here with their two children, both of whom are school age.
Okay, that's enough.
Okay.
And Hope Church's members come from all three of these neighborhoods, so it's a good mix of different types of people. And you folks are going to be consultants. Have you ever been consultants? It's again, what's a really cool title?
Unpaid consultants.
Yeah, you're going to be consultants to the ministry team, the welcoming and outreach ministry team for Hope Church. Because they don't know how, they've never done anything like this before. But they think that it would help the common good around their neighborhoods if they could do something for that school. And thinking about the stories we talked about tonight, this morning, sorry. Thinking about those stories and just some of the common good things we've talked about.
Oh, we forgot to say that the members of the church come from all three of these neighborhoods.
I just said that.
Oh. His wife didn't listen. Sorry.
Okay, what conversations do they need to have? What constituencies need to be brought on board? What roadblocks might be in the way? What advice would you give them? Just think about that for 30 seconds. You can respond to any of those questions. They're really looking for help.
I would think one of the first things that this is the church that's going to help, wants to help the school, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the first things they should do is go in and find out what the school has and doesn't have, you know, before you start making recommendations. Find out what's there, what works, what doesn't work, what's good, what isn't good. So I would think before you get too carried away, find out what exists, what needs
situation analysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the school itself.
Where are their weaknesses?
Also, an analysis of what resources are available, both, you know, the human resources, the people who are members of the church, and other resources of the church, you know, facilities or programs, or what are their strengths and what's their inventory, where do they, you know, and then you look to match things.
Do your homework first.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
Having worked with public schools, my eye went right away to roadblocks because the schools can be, in my experience, can be very resistant to outside, even people who want to do good. They can be very resistant because they are professionals and they know what they're doing, and they'll just come in and mess up our program. And so I would say the first conversations need to be informal, getting to know you with the decision makers and the influences within the school system.
So you're talking about administrators, teachers.
Right, developing relationship before you go in and say we're going to do
great. So that's one of the conversations that's needed.
And is there a PTA?
And administration.
Okay, so
I can think of a very specific thing in the school where I was principal. The PTA decided to have this big fundraiser for some playground equipment. We wanted playground without equipment so the kids would be playing soccer, creative play, all that kind of thing. So there was a compromise made, but there are two really different philosophies of what kids need.
So you have to find out those things. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's one of the things I was thinking about. What are the values? The church needs to describe what their values are. I guess that's a conversation that's needed that have to do with the common good.
Mm-hmm.
What is the value? Is it justice, or is it, what is it? Is it inclusion? Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing, if you want to hear about Sankey, you don't know this, but the church has a music minister now, and he's just
the guy's coming in. Yes.
So
yeah.
You see, he's gonna find out what the music program is like there. Do they need a little after school music or whatever?
Meg,
you know.
Haven't heard from me yet. You want to jump in on this?
Well, it seemed to me the very basic question was asking the school, just going straight to the school, what needs are there? What can we do? And then taking that back to the church, and like you said, what resources do we have to fill these needs? I mean, and the relationship building is obviously a big issue, too. We have a school in Salem that our church works very well. They're next door to one another and have come in and done, you know, after-school reading programs and school supplies, backpacks, you name it. I mean, there's just lots of different things,
yeah.
But it originated with people going in and asking, what are your needs? Who are your new children? What will you allow us to do? And letting the school dictate it.
So it's a good example of what VLCA calls the accompaniment model of ministry. Going and asking the people,
yeah.
In that case, you're asking the school people. Does anybody think they ought to ask the people in the neighborhood who are sending their kids there? They ought to find out from them.
I was going to say, what are the needs of the parents and children in that neighborhood?
Yeah.
It is directed with the school, but what beyond that? And I have another concrete example. Central Lutheran opened an after-school program where
mm-hmm.
I go.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a direct need of the school, but it was a need of the parents. And in this situation, the parents in the north, west, south, and east may all have the need for an after-school program, so it may bring them all together
mm-hmm.
rather than being contentious. Even though the school in the north is a different school,
mm-hmm.
the church could be meeting their needs as well as the neighborhood school.
Yes. Yes.
The community needs, I mean, I'm just thinking of our community. We have a backpack buddy program with food. I mean, very high proportion of families in churches in the community, I mean, there's Christian church, Baptist church, Ark Lutheran church, Nazarene church,
mm-hmm.
all participate together in this backpack buddy program to support,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
you know, through the school, but it supports the whole
uh-huh.
community.
Uh-huh.
Well, certainly collaborations with other,
churches,
churches
as well. So
with,
I would expand the conversation
values.
To not just
uh-huh.
your
okay.
home. I would look to what can we do together.
Okay. Can you see any major roadblocks?
Maybe the school doesn't want help.
Right.
Yeah.
That
could be.
Yeah.
The community does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm a parent that lives in the north, and you're helping the school down there. We have kids up here too.
Ah, exactly.
Yeah. Why are you helping just that school?
Yeah, exactly right. In fact, we have that in our congregation.
I mean, they're right. Home school system, but it was in the suburbs.
Yeah.
But the school serves the whole, all three neighborhoods?
No.
Oh,
it only serves the two in the city.
Oh.
That line across there is the separation between the city and the
oh.
suburb. So this only serves the neighborhoods south of that.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
that
we have two school districts involved.
But your church,
but the membership comes from
yeah.
up there. So,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely that would be a
sure. Yeah.
Is that much willing to support?
Yeah. These are really good examples. I want to share one other one. We were involved with desegregation of the Columbus Public Schools, and I was president of PTA at the junior high school. And our tradition had been to have a once a month gathering together where there would be music for the kids and little acts in the auditorium and food and stuff like that. So we wanted to have all the kids come. And so the Boston kids wanted to come as well. But there's no transportation provided except for school. But we made a partnership with the community, St. Stephen's Community House in their neighborhood. And they had a van or a bus kind of thing that we could hire to bring the kids from that neighborhood. Because otherwise they couldn't get there to any of the school functions. And so they could not be included in some of the social events that we all felt was important for them to get to know each other. So that's another thing that you can do when you ask the people of the community, and we got a couple people from that community to be on the PTA board, so they could say, well, yeah, that sounds great, but how do our kids get there? Most of our families don't have cars. So if you ask the people that are involved in the whole situation, you get a different story than if you just go to the school and say to the PTA, because maybe those people are not on the PTA, unless they've got a car and can come to the meetings, and maybe the principal and the teachers don't know about that either, so you have to ask them as well. And I'm watching the time, and I know the lunch bell's going to ring, so you want to go on, Dick, with the conclusion? That was a terrific discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Seeing this is actually our church, we thank you for all the advice.
Yeah, and I
we'll,
just have
we'll send
to
you the bill for the consulting.
Well, and since we've told you the other stuff, a pastor that we had probably in the late 70s, moved into this neighborhood. The next pastor moved into this neighborhood, and we have a new pastor now, came a year ago, and she's going to move right there, two streets south of church. So they have chosen different reasons, but it's just interesting.
Yep. Okay, where are we here? Okay. It says, we hope that these stories and questions have helped you connect some dots between public education, Christian community, and enhancing the common good. And we hope it's helped you think about your own situation back home.
It sure has.
Yeah, did for us, for sure. Let's review the session, however, from an educational standpoint.
And that's what was on the yellow handout, which we also gave out the very first day.
So we like to return to this kind of essences of adult learning. So thinking about what we did just now, high stakes. Everyone who has children or grandchildren in public education, this is a high stakes matter. is it?
Can I add, even if you don't, it's high stakes.
It's high stakes for our society, isn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's really high
yes.
stakes for our society.
Mm-hmm.
Were we problem-centered today? Well, the story showed how self-interest in one child's education can move to becoming concern for the common good. Did we have some humor? Well, Judy started out with the many folks want to serve God, but only as advisors. Emotion? It's always there when the welfare of our child and of our society in general is there. Did we connect the new concept of the theology of community to your prior knowledge of some familiar Bible passages and your general knowledge about schools? I hope so. We used learning center approaches, stories, discussions. We didn't lecture at you. We read a bit at you, but you were involved as well. Verbal, written, and visual were there. And we had many questions that connected some of the important issues of our time. Here's a peek at our final session tomorrow. Adults learn best, as I said, by connecting prior knowledge to new knowledge. And in our concluding session on adult ed, we'll connect a guided meditation on the feeding of the 5,000, which I guess was the Bible study this morning, and we're going to do a different approach to that with a guided meditation on it. And you'll be putting yourselves, if you come, we'll be putting you folks in the shoes of those who were on the hillside. And we'll combine that with Walter Brueggemann's recent contrasting of scarcity thinking and abundance thinking. So, hope to see you all tomorrow. Thanks for a really good discussion.
Thank you. Glad you could come. It's tomorrow at 11 also, but in that room, in case you're not on the hiking trail.